3, 2, 1. Hi, I'm Joe Tate, and I have a podcast. It's called Over the Timeline. I look back at the highlights and a few lowlights of my sports broadcast career. Over the Timeline, brought to you by the Life Care Centers of Elyria, Westlake, and Medina.
Welcome to another edition of the Over the Timeline podcast with Joe Tate. It's brought to you by Life Care Centers of Elyria, Westlake, and Medina. My name is Andy Bulbarch, and as always, I am settled up alongside Joe Tate. Joe, great to be joined by you once again. And, well, the last time that you and I sat down and did one of these Over the Timeline podcasts, we discussed the process of the pregame interview, and one of your more interesting subjects was a British consulate named Leslie Reed. And one of the things we got to talking to along the way was all of the other surprises that you had come up when talking about pregame interviews. And that brings us into today's topic, the day where Buddy Bell decided to take over and do the interviewing.
That's right, Buddy Bell. It happened right around the batting cage before a ball game down at the old stadium. And, Buddy made some smart remark about, hey, you know, This looks like the easiest job in the world, being a radio announcer. You know, all you got to do is hold the microphone and, you know, ask silly questions, blah, blah, blah. And I said, oh, yeah, you think you're so good at it? Here. And I handed him the microphone, and what happened, happened. Yeah. he took it and went to work.
And you'll hear a few of these clips here in just a few moments, but I found that interesting because, you know, you have a lot of guys throughout the course of the season that will come to you and say, boy, what an interesting job, what a fun job that must be for you guys. And then most of the smart alecks along the way say the same thing. Boy, that seems pretty easy. And then you shove a microphone in front of their face and they have no idea what questions to ask. They have no idea what to say next. And, you know, we'll hear some things from Buddy Bell coming up here in just a few moments. But that also comes along the way with having a great relationship with the manager, speaking with them, interacting with them on a daily basis. And it's pretty playful. But, you know, what were some of your major takeaways before we play some of the clips from some of the questions that Buddy asked?
Well, Buddy, first of all, he was a very gregarious guy, so he was going to have fun with it. And I think I can think of some guys on that baseball team that I would never have given the microphone to because we would have had to bleep out the whole thing. But with Buddy, I knew it was going to be funny and fun, and it was. It really was. No, Buddy Bell was a good guy. It's interesting. You bring up the subject of these pregame interviews. You go through a season of 100, at the time, 154 games, and you have to come up with somebody every day. Now, back in the old days, and I'm talking when I first got into it in the early 70s, you could work both sides of the field, talk to players from, you know, the other team as well as your own, so we had a lot of people to talk to. But as money reared its ugly head, we started to get the, well, yeah, I'll talk to you. What are you giving away? And that was, then guys wouldn't come on unless you gave them something. Well, I didn't have anything to give them. And so you limited the people on the other side that you could talk to. Usually you looked for guys who used to play for the Indians that you knew personally that they weren't going to touch you up for a gift certificate or money. There were people that actually paid money for pregame interviews. You looked for the people that were available that wanted to talk, other announcers. Oh, yeah, that was just a given. You were definitely going to talk to the other team's announcers, and they in turn, of course, Ernie Harwell with the Detroit Tigers, who was one of the truly great gentlemen I have ever met in my life, and he was also a very good baseball announcer. Ernie gave Sibley shoes to people who he talked to, and I collected at least two pair of Sibley shoes every season because he would definitely come do me on a pregame show once or twice, and I got my shoes. I think I still got a pair of Sibley shoes in the closet.
Wow. Okay. And I think in return, he was able to get his hands on either a gift certificate to a nice restaurant in downtown Cleveland, or he was able to buy his wife or maybe his daughter some jewelry, right?
That's true, too. Yeah.
I mean, both sides benefit here. And, you know, it's fascinating you bring up that name, Ernie Harwell, because he was one of the guys, I think, that famously stated many years ago when they asked him, what's your least favorite part of the broadcast? He said the pregame interview, because it just becomes so monotonous by the time you get to July or you get to August. You know, you've been doing this for 4 or 5 months, and it's so tough to come up with different questions to the guys that you speak with every single day. And that's what kind of makes this particular subject, I think, all the more interesting, because the managers, I think, sometimes will tell you the same kind of thing. Yeah, they don't mind sitting down and doing the interviews with you, but, you know, it gets difficult to kind of spice things up and give you different answers when you're experiencing the same things from a day-to-day basis. And I would imagine that's kind of what brought this up with Buddy Bell as well.
Well, absolutely. And as the season wore along, you could almost predict what the player was going to say before he said it, because they got into a pattern, and you got the same kind of answer no matter what the question was. Then September rolled around and they opened the 40-man roster, and you got all the guys coming up from AAA. Oh, there's a whole new set of guys to talk to. And, of course, they're still walking around looking at the big time for the first time. And they were easy pickings in September. You love to see them show up.
Uh-huh, new subject matter. Thank God. Yeah, guys I haven't spoken to 15 times already. Well, and also, players, as you know, are extraordinarily superstitious. You hear more about that in baseball than you do any other sport, but let's not take the other sports out of the equation. There are a lot of football, basketball, soccer, hockey, and you name it. There are a lot of guys and gals who are extraordinarily superstitious. But with baseball, you hear more about that. For example, I'm not sure how many times you may have experienced this, but I would always get this. If I interviewed a guy, and the next day he'd go 4 for 4, he would be knocking on my hotel room door the next morning saying, you have to have me on the pregame show again. But when the shoe was on the other foot and he went 0 for 5, I mean, he would avoid me like the plague for the next week, because he thought that me doing the interview with him had everything to do with him going 0 for 5.
You are so right. Believe it or not, that what Bull says is absolutely true. Yeah, they can look at you as a lucky charm or a real pariah.
Yeah, and it's fascinating how everybody handles that differently, but baseball players are extraordinarily superstitious. Let's play one of the clips from when Buddy Bell decided to take the microphone and take matters into his own hands once he looked and saw, man, you know, maybe this job isn't so tough. So here's the beginning of this interview, and Joe actually helped him out a little bit along the way.
You're going. You're on.
Well, here we are, Municipal Stadium, here on Sunday afternoon. My guests are Jovial Joe Tate and Oscar Gamble. Oscar, you've been swinging a hot bat lately. What's your secret?
Swing it.
That's real good, Oscar. You ought to be shot for saying it. Joe, how's the vocal cords lately?
They're a little tired, you know, 9 in a row. That kind of stretches the tendons there in the throat a little bit.
Well, that's good, and I hope you have many more telecasts, and I hope you're off the air
in a
week.
But
I'm on the radio, so he didn't quite have the platform right, but I thought Oscar Gamble giving him the one-word answer was pure gold, because, oh, buddy, got a pretty good idea as to what you go through on a daily basis.
You can run into that, yep. Oscar, well, I can remember Oscar so well, standing in the fog in Boston one night, high fly ball out to left field. He's looking up into the fog. He obviously doesn't see it. In fact, Herb said, I don't think Oscar sees it. And he just finally put his arms out like, I don't know where it is, and the ball fell within about 2 feet of him. And plunk, into the wet sod out there in Fenway.
Good old Oscar Gamble. And again, the one-word answer. You have to love those. You
swinging.
And you know what? He asked him an open-ended question there well, so I thought he phrased that first question pretty well for a guy that didn't have a whole lot of experience doing that, but I think very quickly he realized who he needed to turn to, because he went right to you with the next question.
That's right.
Now, you gave him a little bit more than Oscar Gamble gave him, but I thought it was fascinating how he adjusted on the fly like that, but he knew that since he posed that whole scenario to you before getting the microphone, you were going to give him a little bit of help, but you weren't going to give him a ton, were you?
No, I wanted him to prove that he could do the job or else fold and silently steal away.
Yeah. We're going to step aside and take a quick break. We'll hear these messages from the Life Care Centers of Elyria, Westlake, and Medina, and then we will come back with more here with Joe Tate on the Over the Timeline podcast brought to you by Life Care Centers of Elyria, Westlake, and Medina.
He was a voice heard by Cleveland Cavalier and Cleveland Indians fans for decades.
There's a long drive to left field!
Until illness struck.
I've been at Life Care twice. Both times, they helped me fight my way back home. It wasn't easy, but I came back.
Meet Joe Tate.
Life Care helped get me back on my feet.
Real people, real heroes. Life Care Centers of America.
With locations in Elyria, Westlake, and Medina.
Welcome back to another edition of the Over the Timeline podcast with Joe Tate, brought to you by Life Care Centers of Elyria, Westlake, and Medina. Today we are discussing the art of the pregame interview and how it took a bit of a twist with Joe Tate handing the microphone over during the pregame interview to Buddy Bell, and Buddy kind of took over. So, you know, just a couple of other things that kind of come into play here. Do you think that after the interview, Buddy Bell was given a different kind of appreciation for what happens on the other side of the microphone?
No. I'm doing an Oscar gamble on you there. No. One-word answer sums it up.
Well, and did he ever venture to do this again? Was this something he volunteered for after this, or is this just a one-time deal?
This was a one-time deal.
Well, I think we have our answer there. I think he figured it out pretty quickly that this is a heck of a lot tougher than it looks. Now, have you done this with any other coach or manager? Has another coach or manager come to you with this whole same scenario?
You know, Ray Fossey, remember him, a great catcher with the Indians. Ray ended up with his own pregame show. I had him on, and somebody heard him and thought they'd sponsor the Ray Fossey pregame show. And so I did Ray Fossey every day, and that was good. Ray talked well. He was a good guy, and we used to sit down out in the bullpen dugout and do his show every pregame, and so I didn't have to worry about other players for the rest of that season.
Now, you got shoes from Ernie Harwell. Did Ray Fossey give you anything?
No. I just held the microphone, and Ray did his thing. I interviewed Ray every day.
Okay. Now, you mentioned Oscar Gamble before, too. Was Oscar caught off guard by that question? Because you mentioned this just kind of happened around the batting cage, and, boy, around the batting cage, you can catch some conversations that could probably get you into some trouble with the FCC. But was Oscar caught off guard by that question, or did he kind of know Buddy was coming his direction?
No, he did not know Buddy was coming. Buddy wasn't holding that microphone out there in front of him. He was holding it down on his side so he didn't see it until he popped it right up under your nose. So I thought Oscar's one-word answer was a jewel.
Wow. Well, we have some more jewels coming your way, too. Here's the second clip from that interview where Buddy Bell decided to go a different direction.
Here's my other guest just walked in, Dave Duncan. Duncan's got a haircut, and it doesn't look like he got one, but I see you're growing a stash. How's it coming? Slow. Well, like I said before, Dunk, it's getting past the ugly stage, and once you get past the ugly stage, it's all right. Joe, how do you get along with Herb up there in the booth?
We never speak. We've had a feud going for a number of years, and I have nothing to do with him.
We've got a feud going, and I want nothing to do with him. Well done. Well, I thought Duncan as well kind of gave him the Oscar Gamble treatment when he wanted to talk about his haircut or his mustache. That was pretty much the end of it right there. You can't mess with a baseball player's style. And you have any idea what the ugly stage in the development of a mustache looks like?
No, although your chin whiskers on occasion have approached that. You got them under control now, but you got to be careful. They can get away from you. Duncan, no, you did not want to get on the wrong side of Dave Duncan, because I remember the night we were coming back from Sox Park in Chicago, and we were coming up a side street to get back to the Dan Ryan, and there was some kid on the hood of his car, and these three guys were just pounding the bejabbers out of him, and his girlfriend, obviously his girlfriend, was standing there screaming, you know, help him, help him. Duncan was sitting up front because he kind of took over when the manager didn't ride the bus, and he just said to the driver, stop the bus. And the driver stopped the bus. Duncan and about three other guys piled off the bus, and they cleaned those kids' clocks. I mean, they wiped them out, and the girl, oh, thank you, thank you, thank you. But Duncan, I think Duncan hit the guy four times before the guy even knew what happened. I would want Dave Duncan on my side if it came to an altercation. And that whole thing, they actually sued the Indians and Duncan and went to court, and Duncan was exonerated when the girl got up and explained that, you know, these guys were just beating the tar out of her boyfriend and she was pleading for help, that Dave Duncan rode to the rescue along with two or three other Cleveland Indians, and they were all exonerated of any wrongdoing. I guess a couple of those guys they beat up had warrants outstanding, so they ended up in the pokey anyway.
Wow. Well, that's interesting, and I think that kind of explains why Buddy Bell decided to move along pretty quickly after Dave Duncan gave him just a quick one-word answer. But then again, when you're the manager, you know, you've got a little bit of leeway, don't you? You could point out some of these things, and you could talk about whether a stash is in the ugly stage or in the development stage or, oh, I don't know, in the Tom Selleck stage.
There you go.
You ever grown a stash?
Well, other than what I'm sporting these days, I've had a beard for years, and it kind of creeps around the upper lip. So, yeah, but as far as just a mustache with no other accoutrement, no, I've always brought full beard or nothing at all.
Okay, I was going to say, in all the years that I've been around you, I've known you with a beard and nothing else. I didn't even know that for the longest time there you actually went around clean shaven. You did beard or nothing with you.
That's right.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. I did not realize that. Beard or nothing. All right. Well, moving along from the stash, there's one last clip I want to play here as well where Buddy Bell took one last shot at this. And again, this was an interview that lasted somewhere in the area of a minute and a half to maybe 2 minutes. And if you've tuned into interviews before, you know that usually, especially for a baseball pregame interview, they last a little bit longer than that. And this gives you a pretty good idea as to what kind of a job Buddy Bell did with this pregame interview before handing things back over to Joe.
My guest over here, Chris Samus, he's swinging a hot bat now. Chris, what's your secret for lately? I mean, last year you got off to a slow start, but this year you've got off to a pretty good start.
I'm hitting 150.
Well, that's pretty good. Heck, Gaylord hit 130 all last year. You're 20 points higher than he is. So what is your secret, though?
I'm not making good contact.
Not making good time. Well, this is my show for the day, and I have to turn it back to Joe. And I'm sure Chris will be hanging in there. He'll get up to 170 by the end of the year.
See, sometimes that's all it takes. You get that third answer you're not necessarily looking for, and I think at that point we just kind of figured Buddy Bell was going to throw in the towel and say, okay, we'll hand it back over to Joe. Yeah,
Chris Chambliss was a pretty darn good hitter. In fact, he was eventually traded to the Yankees in a trade that brought great disfavor from whatever Cleveland Indian fans were left. That was not a popular trade at all. But, Chambliss went on to even better things with the Yankees.
And I thought that was hilarious there towards the end when he said, what's your secret? Just not making good contact, right? Yeah, simple enough. You want to hit 150? Just don't make good contact. Well, I'll give Buddy Bell credit for this. I mean, some pretty quick thinking on his feet there, talking about how Gaylord Perry had hit, what, .130 the year before. So he was only 20 points higher. And, you know, managers always tell you, right, we don't always look at the numbers. They don't get caught up in the numbers. Well, he was pretty quick to think of Gaylord Perry's batting average off the top of his head.
Well, Buddy Bell was just a good guy, and he was having fun. But he did, I think you hit her right on the head. He discovered maybe it's easier to stand there and answer the questions than it is to try to find somebody who will take the questions and answer back.
Well, and the comfortability, too. You know, anytime you discuss a pregame interview, there's got to be a certain amount of comfortability that's mixed in there as well. Because, you know, yeah, you know, when you're in the position you were in, you had access to all these guys. But that doesn't necessarily mean that because they're great athletes and they're used to performing under pressure, that doesn't mean that they're comfortable answering questions that they know are going to be broadcast to a large number of people a little bit later on that day. It takes a lot of comfortability. And I think even sometimes when you throw the manager into the mix, that throws a lot more uncomfortability into the mix.
I think it's always fun to listen to Tom Hamilton talk to Tito Francona. They have obviously developed a real camaraderie, and I am sure the conversations that they have before and after the microphone has been used would be priceless, because they are both men who tell it like it is. And I'm sure some of the exchanges off mic were even better than the ones on mic. But Hamilton is an excellent interviewer.
I agree 100%. And as a matter of fact, the last time we had a dugout show, he had explained some of the conversations that he's had with Terry Francona throughout the course of the year. And I 100% agree. You listen to them talk. Tom Hamilton doesn't necessarily have to ask him a question. It just comes off as a conversation between two friends, and I think you'll agree that's the mark of a great interview.
Oh, you get to that point, then it's golden. Then you start, when you get to the point where you're looking forward to interviewing someone, then you know you've established that camaraderie that will really carry the day.
And when you listen closely to those two go back and forth, I mean, Tito will kind of give him a little bit. You got to read between the lines a little bit, but you know he'll certainly give him something in those pregame interviews, no question about that. It's always a lot of fun to listen to those two go back and forth, but you're right. I think you're onto something with the conversations that they have off the air. You know, Terry Pluto has done a wonderful job over all these years. Of course, the book that he did with you, it's been a real ball. He also did Glory Days in a Tribe Town, where he talks with Tom Hamilton about the last quarter of a century of Indians baseball. And they reveal a lot of some of the behind-the-scenes things that will take place. And that's maybe another book he should do. He should talk to Tito and Tom Hamilton to see what kinds of things they can clue you in on behind the scenes that they speak of that, well, they probably can't take to the airwaves right now.
That's true, Bull. And you are probably, before your days are done in the broadcast biz, probably going to run into some situations like that, which I hopefully will include people you enjoy talking to.
Well, you get a combination of the two for sure along the way, and that's why I thought the whole pregame interview conversation would be a lot of fun. I know the last time we did this, we talked and joked about how you were able to get the British consulate on, and that turned into a conversation that brought up the phrase "well struck" playing cricket overseas, and I think we worked that into the conversation you had that Kareem Abdul-Jabbar begrudgingly did while he was stretching. And I think the way you described that was interviewing a teeter-totter, right?
Oh, that was unbelievable. I didn't want to do it. He obviously did not want to do it. But because he had this book that they had told him, you've got to promo the book, and the only way to do it is to get radio announcers, TV guys, to talk to you about it. And you know, he was not going to break out of his routine for me, especially me. I mean, who am I? Just some guy he's never seen before with a microphone in my hand. So I was actually teeter-tottering, you know, in juxtaposition to where he was to get the job done. That was a job. I did not enjoy it. I know he did not enjoy it, but it was something that powers that be felt should be done. So, yeah, I can still remember that one, and I don't remember it with a lot of fondness.
Yeah. Well, and some of them are a lot of fun because sometimes you do get some gold out of some of these guys and some of these ladies as well. But, boy, some you really have to work for. There's no question about that. Joe, as always, a pleasure, my friend. These are always so much fun to do and so much fun to discuss. This was pretty unique. Anytime the manager takes the microphone and tries to take matters into his own hands, you never know what you're going to get. I'll give Buddy Bell a little credit. for at least attempting it and getting about 90 seconds out of it, though you helped him along the way. This had to be pretty fun from your perspective as well.
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed that he was sweating a little bit before it was over. Yeah, Buddy Bell, of course, played for the Indians and then later became a manager. In fact, I think he's done a little bit of everything. He's watched his son become a ball player. His dad, Gus Bell, was an outstanding player with the Cincinnati Reds. So he had seen baseball from a whole lot of perspectives. That afternoon at the batting cage, he saw a new perspective, and I don't think he liked it.
Hey, you know what? Baseball's all about new experiences. That was a new one for him, for sure. Joe, as always, a pleasure, my friend. We look forward to doing another one of these again soon.
Okay, Bolt.
Thank you, Joe, again. Joe Tate on the Over the Timeline podcast. It's brought to you by Life Care Centers of Elyria, Westlake, and Medina. For Joe, this is Andy Bolbart saying thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch you next time.